300. In the sheepfold at Ender. 13th October 1945. Jesus goes back to Ender only. He stops at the first house of the village, which is a sheepfold, rather than a house. But just because it is such, with low closed stables full of hay, it can shelter the 13 pilgrims. The landlord, a coarse but good man, hastens to bring a lamp and a small pail of frothy milk, with some small loaves of very dark bread. He then withdraws, blessed by Jesus, who remains with only the 12. Jesus offers and hands out the bread, and as they lack bowls or cups, each of them dips his bread into the little pail and drinks out of it, when thirsty. Jesus drinks only a little milk. He is grave and silent, so much so, that after the meal, when they have satisfied their appetite, which is always very good, they at last become aware of his quietness. Andrew is the first to ask,
"What is the matter with you, Master? You look sad, or tired to me."
"I do not deny that I am."
"Why? Because of those Pharisees? You should be accustomed to them by now. I have almost got accustomed myself. And you know how I used to react to them earlier. They always sing the same song, 'Snakes can but hiss,' in fact, and none of them will ever be able to imitate the singing of a nightingale. One ends up by not paying attention to them,"
says Peter, both earnestly and to cheer up Jesus.
"And that is how one loses one's control and falls into their coils. I ask you to never get accustomed to the voice of evil, as if it were harmless."
"Oh, well, if that is the only reason why you are sad, you are wrong. You can see how the world loves you,"
says Matthew.
"But is that the only reason why you are so sad? Tell me, my good master, or have they told you lies, or made slanderous insinuations or insinuated suspicion, or I do not know what, about us who love you?"
asks the Iscariot solicitously and kindly, embracing with one arm Jesus, who is sitting beside him on the hay. Jesus turns towards Judas. His eyes flash like phosphorus in the flickering light of the lamp laid on the ground in the middle of the circle of the apostles sitting on the hay. Jesus stares at Judas of Kiriath and asks him,
"And do you know me to be so silly as to accept as true anybody's insinuations, to the point of being upset by them? It is real facts, Judas of Simon, which upset me."
And his eyes do not stop for one moment, piercing, like a probe, the brown eyes of Judas.
"Which real facts are upsetting you, then?"
insists the Iscariot in a tone of confidence.
"The ones I see in the depths of hearts, and on dethroned foreheads."
Jesus lays stress upon the word. Everybody becomes excited.
"Dethroned? Why? What do you mean?"
"A king is dethroned when he is unworthy of remaining on the throne, and the first thing they tear off him is the crown, which is on his forehead, the most noble part of man, the only animal with his forehead erect towards the sky, as he is animal with regard to matter, but supernatural as a being gifted with a soul. But it is not necessary to be king on an earthly throne to be dethroned. Every man is king, because of his soul, and his throne is in heaven. But when a man prostitutes his soul, and becomes a brute and demon, he then dethrones himself. The world is full of dethroned foreheads which are no longer erect towards heaven, but are stooped towards the abyss, weighed down by the word which Satan has carved on them. Do you want to know it? It is the one I read on foreheads. There is written, 'Sold,' and that you may have no doubt as to who the buyer is, I tell you that it is Satan, by himself or through his servants in the world."
"I have understood. Those Pharisees, for instance, are the servants of a servant who is greater than they are, and who is Satan's servant,"
says Peter earnestly. Jesus does not reply.
"But, do you know, Master, that those Pharisees, after hearing your words, were scandalized when they went away? They said so, when they bumped into me while going out, 'You were very resolute,'"
remarks Bartholomew. And Jesus replies,
"And very truthful. It is not my fault, but theirs, if certain things must be said. And it was charitable of me to say them. Any plant which was not planted by my heavenly Father is to be uprooted. And the useless moorland of parasitic, suffocating thorny herbs, which destroy the seed of the holy truth, was not planted by him. It is charitable to uproot traditions and precepts which suffocate the Decalogue, misinterpreting it and making it inert and impossible to abide by. It is charitable to do so, for the sake of honest souls. As far as those insolent, obstinate persons are concerned, who are deaf to every advice and action of love, leave them alone, and let them be followed by those whose souls and inclinations are like theirs. They are blind men leading blind men. If one blind man leads another, both can but fall into a pit. Let them feed on their own uncleanness, which they call cleanliness. It cannot contaminate them any further, because it lies on the matrix from which it originates.
What you are saying now is connected with what you said in Daniel's house, is it not? That it is not what goes into the mouth of man that makes him unclean, but what comes out of it.
Asks Simon the Zealot gravely.
Yes.
Replies Jesus briefly. After a moment's silence, as Jesus' gravity freezes even the most exuberant characters, Peter asks,
Master, I, and I am not the only one, have not understood the parable very well. Please explain it to us. How is it that what goes in does not make unclean, and what comes out does? If I take a clean amphora and I pour dirty water into it, I will dirty it. So what goes into the amphora makes it unclean. But if from an amphora full of clean water I pour some of it onto the ground, I will not make the amphora unclean, because clean water comes out of it. So?
And Jesus says,
We are not amphorae, Simon. We are not amphorae, my friends. And not everything is clean in man. Do even you not understand? Consider the case with which the Pharisees charged you. They stated that you were unclean, because you were taking food to your mouths with dusty, sweaty hands, that is, with unclean hands. But where did that food go? From your mouths into your stomachs, from your stomachs into your intestines, and from your intestines into the sewer. Can it thus make your whole body unclean, and what is contained in your body, if it only goes through the passage destined to fulfill the task of nourishing the flesh, and the flesh only, and then ending in the sewer, as it is right it should? That is not what makes man unclean. What makes man unclean is what is entirely and exclusively his own, procreated and brought forth by his ego. That is, what he has in his heart, and from his heart rises to his lips, and to his head, corrupting his thoughts and words and making him wholly unclean. From the heart come evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, blasphemy. From the heart come avarice, lust, pride, envy, wrath, immoderate desires and sinful idleness. From the heart come incentives to all actions. And if the heart is wicked, they will be as wicked as the heart. All actions. From idolatry to insincere grumbling, all these wicked things, which from inside come outside, make man unclean, not eating without washing one's hands. The science of God is not a base thing, mud upon which any foot can tread. It is something sublime, which lives among stars, from which it descends with rays of light to perfect the just. Do not, at least you, tear it from heaven, to disgrace it in mud. Go and rest now. I am going out to pray.